Well, we thought a little E.T. music would be good to start the show today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Today we're talking about the new sci-fi book. It's titled Rubicon, and our guest is J.S. Dewis. She is also a cinematographer, a video editor, gamer. She's also the author of the Divide series of books, and she's written scripts for award-winning feature films and shorts. She's been a very busy person, for sure. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're a science fiction fan. Maybe you're an aspiring sci-fi writer. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jenny Dewis, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You know, let's just start maybe with a little introduction to Rubicon. What sort of story should readers expect when they pick up your book?
Yeah, so it's definitely science fiction. It leans military science fiction. It might not be, you know, a classic military science fiction. It also has some elements of space opera. But yeah, Rubicon is basically, it takes place in a universe where there's technology that can resurrect soldiers into new bodies when they die. So our main character is Adrian, and she's a soldier who's experienced this 96 times and is understandably a bit world weary because of that and kind of numb from it. So the story starts when she's reassigned to a new special forces unit where death is, you know, it's a rarity there, and they take it a little more seriously. And this is kind of a new experience for her. And then she's also outfitted with a new type of technology that is kind of prototype, that is like a virtual intelligence battle aid. And then she kind of gets wrapped up in the, you know, the forthcoming war, basically, with the sentient robots that are fighting humanity. So that's kind of where the story starts, and it goes from there.
And I like on the cover of your book, you have not only the title, of course, but Live, Die, Reboot. That's kind of the what Adrian went through. What, 96 times was it? I've forgotten.
Yeah, well, yep, 96. Yeah,
you mentioned the number. Where'd you get the idea?
It came from a bunch of different places. So the story originally started as like Phantom of the Opera in space, and then it changed a lot from there. But there was definitely elements of a lot of things. You know, Battlestar Galactica is a huge inspiration of mine, and there's a little bit of that kind of resurrection thing happening there, and sentient, like fighting sentient robots thing happening there. And then there's also a book called Old Man's War by John Scalzi, where there's some of the like resurrecting into new bodies happening. And I think I had read that pretty recently before starting this, and I was like, oh, there's like so much interesting things you could do there, like if you really got into, like, that's kind of just like a element of that like kicks the story off, and I wanted to like dig into it deep. So that's kind of where I wanted to go with that, and then kind of mixing in that whole Phantom of the Opera in space thing, which is, you know, different.
pretty cool actually. And you know, the Divide series, The Last Watch and The Exile Fleet, I read those too. And
great.
And enjoyed them as well as Rubicon, awesome. Which I liked a lot for a lot of reasons. But they're both set many years, obviously, in the future. So the creation of these new worlds, I guess, came from some of what you were just talking about.
Yeah. So I like to write what I think of as kind of second world sci-fi, where there isn't really a direct connection to what we think of as Earth. So they don't really talk about, you know, it doesn't take place in the solar system, our solar system as we know it. And I don't really have, there's no world building in place that like directly connects them to us today. So it's kind of set in either a very, very distant future, or what, you know, I think there's a second world fantasy, but you don't hear second world sci-fi as much. But it's kind of that element where it's like a different world of us that isn't really necessarily connected. And then, yeah, a lot of that comes from, you know, what I read and what I consume from media and stuff.
Yeah. And you certainly have an active life that would, I would think the other kinds of things that you do would spur your imagination as an author.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I come from, like, I picked up a camera at age 8 and never looked back. I loved making movies from a very, very young age, and definitely, like, writing novels came out of that love of, like, wanting to create stories in whatever way I could. And, you know, making a film is a huge undertaking that is massively expensive and time consuming. Whereas writing a novel, you can kind of do it on your own, which, you know, it's a very different experience as far as like collaborative filmmaking versus like the solitariness of writing. But they both have strengths and weaknesses, and it was fun to kind of intermix both.
Yeah. Well, and just as an aside, maybe name a movie or two that you've worked on.
I don't know if it's anything you would know. You know, it was a lot of like indie horror films in like the 2008 to 2012 era. So there's one called Splatter that came out. It was when like the film incentives in the Midwest were becoming really popular. So Iowa had a big film incentive, and I'm from Iowa originally. So I worked on a bunch of the films that they made there, and then those kind of, that film incentive died, and then we moved to Wisconsin. So it kind of like is all over the place, Midwest indie film kind of stuff.
But I think that I would think that maybe working on the films would help you maintain some kind of consistency throughout the books, which you seem to do pretty well.
Yeah, it definitely gave me kind of a like intuitive understanding of plot structure. Like, it's something where I don't plot my books. I don't like to, if I don't have to. I like to just kind of sit down and start writing and see what happens. And I think like having that experience from working on films definitely helped me like just be able to kind of write that without having a structure in place to start with.
Well, it's, I think you do a really good job in all three books, but the Rubicon book in particular, I'm wondering, how do you set new ideas or technologies or creatures and make them digestible for the reader? I think you do a really good job of that.
Oh, thank you. That's one of the things I really wanted to focus on, like when I started writing, is to try to make it like, you know, something that sci-fi fans would enjoy, but that, you know, you could bring in someone that maybe hasn't read sci-fi before and would still be able to understand and enjoy it. So I spend a lot of time doing research to make sure the technology feels natural, or the, you know, creatures in Rubicon's case, there's some of that, feels natural, but then also like is digestible. So there, it actually takes a ton of, that's the thing that takes the most time for me, where it's like I can write characters and dialogue all day and it's super easy. But then when you get down to the technology, it's like, okay, now I have to take 2 hours just to like see how this is done to make like two sentences that make sense. So it can be really, it's super fun though. It's just like kind of like a different part of your brain that you use for that. But yeah.
Does Rubicon, the book Rubicon, fit into the same universe as the Divide series?
It does not. They would be two different universes. Yeah.
So the timeline on do they take place in different timelines as well?
Yeah. So again, they're kind of like this, that whole second world thing. So they're not really connected to Earth, but like they would be, you know, many hundreds or thousands of years in the future if they were, and in a different location. Divide takes place in like across a galaxy, whereas Rubicon is a little more focused in that like the ship they're on is kind of away, but there's only one solar system in Rubicon for where humanity lives, and that's kind of part of the plot, is that the robots that they're fighting are kind of keeping them in that solar system and not allowing them to colonize other planets, but their star in that solar system is dying, so they're trying to colonize other worlds so that humanity can survive, but the robots are kind of trying to prevent them from doing that.
Yeah, as I thought about your book last week, actually, as I was driving back from a trip to Canada and listening to the news about the leaders of AI talking about the fact that we need to do some things to avert kind of in a way what you write about in Rubicon.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely become a hot topic recently, which is great because it's good timing for my book and keywords and stuff. But yeah, it's a big topic in Rubicon as far as like the, you know, the battle aid that Adrian is given. And this isn't really a spoiler because it's on the back copy, but is a what we call a virtual intelligence aid, which just kind of helps you use your suit and helps you use technology and stuff. But then it turns sentient, so it becomes what we call artificial intelligence in that. And then that turns in, and it's only Adrian's that's doing this, and it kind of turns into a whole thing. So it's definitely like a different take on AI as far as like, there's a lot of cautionary tales of AI in sci-fi, and this isn't not that, but the, you know, the battle intelligence, which is called Rubicon, is kind of becomes Adrian's friend in a way, and like helps her heal from some of her trauma. So it's kind of a different take in that way. But yeah, I'm in on the news too, and it's I'm concerned. I'll say that.
Well, let's take a call. Katie and Menasha, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I was just wondering if there is an age recommendation on Rubicon or either of the other books that you've referenced that sound pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a good question that my sister asked because I have nieces and nephews too. there's some swearing, I would say. There's some language in both. Rubicon's a little more, I would say, a higher age range than the Divide series would be. That would be more suitable for younger people if the swearing doesn't bother you. Rubicon has a little more trauma and more stuff that's getting dealt with, a little more, I don't want to call it gore really, but a little
directly.
More action. And yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where it's hard to say, but yeah, the swearing is probably the biggest element of either.
Yeah, there's not really graphic sex,
no.
For example.
No,
there's
no, it's
none
all
of
like
that.
Fade to black kind of stuff, and even that's very minimal.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Katie, does that help?
It does. It helps me a lot. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Talking today with J.S. Duas, author, cinematographer, video editor and gamer and author of the book, one of three books that we've kind of talked about all three a bit. But the one we're really dealing with today is titled Rubicon, Live, Die, and Reboot. And Claire Neipert's our producer, by the way. Glad to have that in. And A. Emily Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about the book Rubicon today on the show with our guest, author J.S. Duas. Jenny has written three books, and we've talked a bit about all three, and you can join in with your own thoughts, questions, or comments. What do you think about science fiction? What do you, are you maybe even an aspiring writer? What would you like to know? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. You know, all of your novels feature a pretty good host of characters. How do you develop those characters? For Rubicon, for example. There's four or five major characters in Rubicon. You've got Adrian, you've got Durago, you've got Major West, you've mm-hmm. got Cato, I think.
Mm-hmm. Cato, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it kind of just comes, is one of those things where it's like, I might be inspired by another character I know, but it kind of just is one of those things I like to, I call it pantsing, right by the seat of your pants,
mm-hmm.
Where you kind of have an idea of like maybe what the main character is, but as you write and you see how the characters interact on the page, then you kind of develop them that way. And then in revisions, you go back through and kind of support what you liked or what you didn't like about kind of what happened. And a lot of people, you know, like to plot that stuff out ahead of time, but I kind of like to see just the dynamics that happen because some really interesting things can happen sometimes Like, for instance, Daroga, which is one of the other main characters other than Adrian, was supposed to just be like this sort of side character that just was the tech guy or whatever, that did whatever the tech guy needed to do. And then he became this whole thing. So like that kind of came out of nowhere. I never planned it, you know, and that's kind of one of my favorite elements of the book now. So I kind of like doing it that way.
Yeah, I've written a couple some books, but the minor of the professorial type, and are not fiction. So, having not written any fiction, it just wonder at how this all happens on a page when you're working on it,
It's definitely different for every book, and it's one of those things where I kind of like will take all my inspiration and it gets mashed up in my head somehow and comes out. And then after the fact, I'm like, oh yeah, I really like Mass Effect is a big inspiration for both my books. It's a video game. And it's like after the fact, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like directly from Mass Effect. Like that's where I got that inspiration. And it's kind of fun that way. And I also like to use music is a huge one. It's actually like a song has been the inspiration for every one of my book ideas so far. And then I use that in my writing process as well. And then there's a concept art website called ArtStation that I love to peruse and look at. And it's just concept art for video games and movies and things. And I collect all that on Pinterest and use that as like visual inspiration for stuff too. So it's a bunch of different things that all come together magically somehow.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the main character, Adrian. Without giving too much away, I mean, she's pretty emotionless in the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. And how'd you make her character kind of evolve? Or how does she evolve in your mind?
Yeah, so I definitely wanted to start out where it was like, you know, what would you feel like if you had died 96 times? I mean, you'd probably have lost your mind probably, but this is fiction. So we're going to say that she somehow survived it, but she's had to kind of cut herself off from emotion because of that. Otherwise she would have gone insane. So she's kind of in this position where she's, you know, feeling numb to the world, doesn't really care about anything, and kind of wants the ability to die. Not that she wants to die, but she wants to be able to die. So she's kind of got this goal or motivation of finding a way to do that. And that's kind of what this the other character, Major West, who gives her this sort of special mission, offers her in exchange. Like, if you do this special mission for me, I will edit the technology basically and make it so that you can die again. And that's kind of her motivation throughout. So I wanted to kind of find a way to set that up and then like have her go on the emotional journey of finding her way back to normalcy through this new situation that she's in, and especially using the technology Rubicon, the battle aid that she's outfitted with, having that be an element of like a growing character who's developing its own personality and is helping Adrian on that journey.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. It's a character in the book, I guess you could say, but it's not a human character, and that artificial intelligence implanted in her brain. And you've got a voice for that. How'd you develop sort of the voice and the motives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for that, there's actually a video game called Mass Effect Andromeda. It's from that same series of games. And in that, there is a battle aid like that, and that helps the whole team. So it's kind of a little different in that way, in that there's not an individual one per person. But in that game, I was just really interested in that relationship and how that would develop. You know, you develop a kind of unique bond with people that you go to war with. And so you've got that element of it, and you also have it literally in your brain. It can read your thoughts. It can feel your feelings. It knows what's happening to you, like physiologically and emotionally. And how would that like dynamic develop? And that just really interested me. So that's kind of where I wanted to kind of dig into stuff there.
I've got to look into some of those games again. You know, this will tell you how old I am. I was really good at Berserk. And you probably have never heard of it.
Oh, no, I've heard of it, yeah. I haven't played it, but I've heard of it.
But I've always thought it'd be fun to get... I'm almost afraid to get involved in those games because I know I'd get addicted.
Oh, yeah, they're very, very addicting. I actually write for video games now, so I've kind of come full circle in that they're, like, the main inspiration for me for writing, and then now I actually write for them, so that's fun.
Well, you've got... In both the Divide series and in Rubicon, for sure, you've got you feature strong, complex female characters. And why is that important in the science fiction genre in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's been kind of historically underrepresented is having female characters that are, you know, well-developed characters in their own right. So it's definitely something I wanted to kind of make part of my author brand, you could say, as far as something like if someone goes to read one of my books, they will know that they will get that element out of it. And I think it's just important because, again, it's something where a lot of, you know, science fiction has been very male-dominated, even more so than fantasy. And it's starting to become not the case. There are so many, you know, female and non-binary authors coming out and starting to write, and we're kind of in a new golden era of science fiction in that way, and I'm really excited and proud to be like part of that like era of things. So I'm really excited to see what comes out the next, you know, decade.
Yeah, I was thinking back, I mean, if you go back to Star Trek, I guess, I can't remember the name of the black woman who, I mean, there was she was really encouraged to stay. She wanted to leave, but she was encouraged to stay both because she was black and because she, a woman of high prestige within the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not, I've watched Star Trek in various forms. I'm not the, like, don't know that much about it, but yeah, there's definitely stuff like that where it's starting to become very exciting.
So let's go beyond gender. How does science fiction writers, how can science fiction writers improve portrayals of diverse characters? I mean, your book, diverse characters for sure.
Yeah. So for me, it's important just to kind of, you know, represent not only like what I experience in my current life and the people that I see and have in my daily life, but also like a world that I would want to see. So a world in which, you know, they just don't even talk about gender because it's not an issue anymore. And kind of showing it that way, like portraying what we, and that's kind of science fiction in general, like a world we would want to see in the future for, you know, not grim, dark science fiction, which Rubicon maybe is a little. but yeah, just like having that element of like, here's a society that functions without any question of, you know, gender norms or racism, etc., where it's just normal everyday things. So it's not even needed to be talked about. And then, yeah, just showing that in a positive light.
You know, one theme, another theme I think that Rubicon explores is that of mortality and immortality. Mm-hmm. I was remembering a spot in the book, let me think. The characters are talking about whether this is there's a military blockade of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
Someone says, well, it's really a fence. And, in order that machines want to be, biological, and they're kind of hanging on to be mm-hmm. hanging on to the people. And the other character says, why? And why would they want to do that? And, the first character says, well, in order to be mortal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess mortality is what makes us human. Is that what you feel?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a complicated question. and one I was asking myself as I was writing it and trying to answer for myself as I was writing it. So I think it's a thing, you know, that's explored a lot in the text and maybe doesn't come to a conclusive answer, but gives you stuff to think about. And that is definitely one of the main elements of it is, you know, what is What is sentience? What is mortality? Is the Rubicon Adrian have mortal because he feels or thinks or talks, or what? Where is that line, and how do we determine that? And, you know, that's, again, not something that's necessarily answered, but it's definitely explored. And
I mean, it makes you stop. Yeah, you certainly do a good job of that, and it does make us, made me think anyway about it, and I'm sure it has to the other readers who have read your book. I don't want to give away the ending, but there are a lot of twists and turns throughout the book. And I'm wondering, are you planning to write a second edition of Rubicon?
So, good question. I originally had written it as a standalone, but it's in a position where I have an idea for a second and I would like to write it, but it's one of those things where the publisher kind of decides if I do that or not. So we'll kind of have to see if they agree that a second book is in store. You know, it's one of those money things that I don't have a ton of control over, but I do have an idea for a second one. But if, you know, that doesn't happen, I'm also happy with where it sits as a standalone. So
kind of wonder what's going to happen to Adrian.
Yeah. I've gotten a lot of Twitter messages that are like, that ending, oh my gosh. And I'm like, I'm sorry, yeah, God.
Kind of a cliffhanger probably a good way, I think, although I was shocked too at the how it ends, and I think many readers would be. Well, what do you do before you start writing? I mean, tell us, I guess I'm asking more about the writing process. You've talked a bit about it, but.
Yeah, so it's, again, different for every book. It kind of depends where I'm starting out with it. But usually for me, it's like a song/playlist and a Pinterest board of just visual inspiration. And then it kind of evolves from there. I like to call myself like a concept up writer. So I have like kind of the big hooky concept, you know, for the Divide series, it'd be like the soldiers stationed at the edge of the universe and the universe starts to collapse. Like that's kind of the big hooky concept. And then I kind of go from there. Usually I'll go into characters after that and then just kind of see what the plot that will support that concept and those characters would be. But it kind of just depends on the book as far as the exact process.
Yeah, that universe collapsing, that was in The Last Watch, if I'm not mistaken. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
That was a. Also, I thought, whoa, I hadn't thought about that ever happening.
Yeah, yeah, me either. But there's actually a song by, there's like a country music super group called The Highwaymen. It's got like Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson and like Willie Nelson and someone else that I always forget. but they have a song called The Highwaymen, and there's a lyric in it that says, I'll fly a starship across the universe divide. And I was like, what does that mean? And that devolved into this whole series of books. So it's just like one little lyric that made the whole thing happen.
And do you have to tailor your writing? I mean, you do video games, movies and books you've been involved in. I mean, is there a lot of effort to sort of tailor your writing for each genre?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crossover between them. They each have their kind of different weirdness things that happen. I haven't written a lot of scripts recently. That's kind of something I did more in my past. But going from that into novel writing, the dialogue was the big thing that kind of connected the two, where it's, you know, I always really loved writing dialogue and scripts, and that could transfer really easily into novel writing. And then it's more about the internalization of the character and like having that kind of narrative perspective and the world building and stuff that is a little different with novel writing. And then with game writing, it was sort of the same thing, like the dialogue kind of transfers over, but then there's a lot of like weird things about games where, you know, it's an interactive thing and there's choices sometimes depending on what you're writing. And I've just started doing that for, I've been doing it for about a year now. So I'm still an apprentice writer in video games, but, but yeah, it's been really fun.
Bill in Grafton emailed and wonders, he says, and I guess he's read the book. He says the book is pretty long, and it is. It was 450 pages, I think Rubicon is, which I kind of liked it. And he did too, apparently. I wonder how many pages do you write a day? Do you have some sort of setup for that?
Yeah, I wish I did. but it's unfortunately, it kind of depends. Like right now I'm revising the third book in the Divide series, so I don't really look at it by page count or word count. Usually I think about it in terms of word count because pages can vary pretty wildly. For example, The Exiled Fleet, the second book in the Divide series, is actually longer than The Last Watch, but it is fewer pages because they put less space between the lines and more text on the page and stuff. So it really just depends how it ends up getting printed. So I think about it in terms of words. If I'm drafting, I like to try to draft at least 500 to 1500 words a day, depending on, if I'm a weekend day, I can write up to 5,000 sometimes if I'm having a good weekend day. But during the week, I might only be able to get out 500 at night, depending.
And someone else wonders, who are some writers who you admire?
Yes, so many. So Martha Wells is a wonderful writer. She wrote the Murderbot Diaries. She also writes fantasy. I've not read her fantasy stuff. The Murderbot Diaries is amazing. It's novellas, so they're really easy to digest and read quickly. They're super fun. And then I always forget. Megan O'Keefe is a great one. She writes the Velocity Weapon is her debut, but then she also just wrote one called The Blighted Stars, which is amazing. I really loved it. It just came out a month ago, I think, or a couple weeks ago. So yeah, those are a couple.
And Doug's wondering, for a piece of advice that's stuck with you when it comes to writing.
Yeah, I think one thing is to find, they always say find your people. For me, it was critique partners specifically, find people that you trust and whose writing you like to read and then exchange stuff with them. I used a website called Scribophile.com and all my critique partners I found there, and we now don't use the website anymore. We just interact in real life, but just finding those people that you can become part of the writing community, I think is really important.
And you mentioned your work. Well, you're obviously working on another book in the Divide series.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're continuing that. You see even more? You see a 4 and 5 in there?
Yeah, so I had originally planned it as 5, but I kind of combined the 3rd and 4th into one book. So the third book will now be a super book. And then the fourth book would kind of cap off that story, I would say. So it'd be a 4-book arc. But then there are lots of other stories I would like to tell in that world. It's a really big universe I've created. So I could see starting a new series that takes place in a different, maybe a different time period or with a different group of characters.
And how did the Divide series go in terms of readers? How many books? I mean, not how many books, but do you feel it went well?
Yeah, I think it went pretty well. I mean, it's as a debut author, it's really hard to tell because they don't really give you a lot of information. and you don't really even get a royalty report to see how many books sold for, I got mine in a year and a half after my first book came out. So it takes a long time to even know that information. But you can kind of get an idea from social media and stuff, and from your editor, asking them how it's going. And I think it went pretty well. It's not going to hit the bestseller list, but that's not really a thing sci-fi does anyways. But it's selling well. My publisher is happy, and the royalties are decent. So it's, mm-hmm. It's a thing where I'll be able to continue it, hopefully.
And Rubicon is also doing well?
Yeah, I think so. It's a little early still to tell. It's only been about 2 months. But from what I can tell on, you can look at your Amazon rankings and kind of get an idea. that's only one retailer, so you don't know for sure, but you can kind of use that as a gauge. And it's up there with my other books, so I think it's doing okay.
Well, it's been a lot of fun talking with you today. And Jenny and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I've read all 3. So
yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
I'll be pulling out the next one when it comes our way. Thank you again for being with us, Jenny.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
J.S. Dewis our guest today. The book that we talked about today is titled Rubicon. Her other two books, The Last Watch and The Exile Fleet, I'm sure are available as well. And you might, like me, you might want to take a look at all three of them. But take a look at Rubicon. It's a fascinating read. And I tell you what, we're going to switch gears a bit, although, I mean, this guy's a mechanic, too, and there were a lot of mechanics in Rubicon, for sure, but this guy works with bikes, and we'll talk about fixing your bike and other things with our next guest on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.